Blog Talk Radio.
Hold on. Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. Are we all straightened out about microphones and all that yet?
I think I still hear a distant echo. And
okay.
I think it's a Blog Talk Radio issue, so I don't know how to work around that because the show would not be live. I'm trying to figure out a way that we could record the show now with WebEx and then rebroadcast this later, although that means we're going to lose all the live callers. Sorry, everybody, while we try and figure this out. I don't know if anybody in chat or anybody on Blog Talk Radio could give me an indication if you're hearing an echo, that would be great.
Okay, I'll watch over here. In the meantime, welcome, everybody. Happy to have you with us. We are going to have another special guest that is going to speak to all of us, I think, and speak to our stomachs especially. It's about people who are stress munchers or stress eaters, people often looking for satisfaction from food more than taste, just some kind of emotional or mental satisfaction. Lisa Lutan, I think is how you pronounce her name. We're looking at her website, and she says in this picture she's 51 years old. That certainly speaks to her good living and good food that she's going to talk to us about. But she's the author of Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed. I love the title. The book is beautiful. We're going to talk about learning why you eat, even when you're not hungry, and she's going to tell us about some of our stress triggers and how to figure them out. We'll be with her in just a few minutes. Richard is over there busy trying to find out what is wrong with this echo. So I'm going to go first with a few announcements. We're being sponsored, as always, from the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health. We're a registered 501c3 nonprofit, the largest alternative research center in Ohio, and what we try to do is bring you information and ideas to help support a better life. Essentially, we stick a microphone in someone's voice and look at a sample of the voice, and we can tell about their nutrition, their stress, their genome. So we're bringing you the show from two of our softwares this week, PTSD that we did for the Army, that shows the nutrients that are associated with stress. And the other one is just the nutritional consultant program so that you can look at your nutrition every day. And that comes free with a Guardian membership that you can find on our site, soundhealthoptions.com. Go to classes and you can look at the Guardian membership. My first announcement is that most of you know I'm not particularly a Trump supporter, although I think Trump and Carson are after the same thing, change with the people in mind. They're just taking different approaches. But this is what I think is really happening to the whole movement, and no one has exactly put their finger on it. When we look at the idea of a civil war, the one that we remember here is that brother against brother, son against father, and the South against the North. And I don't think we want to take that up again. I don't think we want to take guns and be shooting at each other. But I think what's coming out in this election certainly is a civil war. It is the people against the government. a revolution that we've had enough. We're not going to be used anymore. And it's absolute stress about these elections. I'm full up hearing about this election. But I think that what's being brought out is certainly the dissension, the dissatisfaction of the people. And for us to be in the middle of a civil war, we can vote with our vote or fight with our vote. Now, some have likened Trump to Hitler. Well, Trump doesn't have an army behind him. And I said in the beginning, when Trump first came in, the things that you could keep Trump going, because I really said he's going to bring out what he wants to bring out, and he's going to give all of his votes to someone else. But I said there's two things that will keep him going. One, if you tell him he can't. And two, if you try to attack the people who are supporting him, and he will go on. So they're calling his supporters stupid by likening him to Hitler. People want massive change, and they see Trump as a way to facilitate that change. You know, I really don't see why Trump would even want this job. It's running everybody else's life, and I have a hard time running my own life. And that's what our guests are going to talk about, too. So I think he is doing this for the people. And I applaud him for that, even though I don't agree with some of his stances. I think he's going to be the one leading the revolution, overturning these incredible perks for government people and incredible salaries and pensions. And I think we've just had enough. Now, one of the things that you know about the show is when we make predictions, it's about a week before these predictions come out, usually on Fox News. I don't know which one of you are listening on Fox News here, but I would predict that this idea of Trump leading a revolution, if they can get it out there, because it's going to be the point he can win on against anybody. So, Richard, are you back with us yet? Okay. Do you have any announcements, Richard? I just dropped a bomb on him. Now we don't hear your microphone, Richard. Is that what it took to get rid of the echo? No mic, Richard. Okay. I will go on then and show you something else on our website. I'm here at WebEx. And people are watching the show. Richard is over on Blog Talk Radio, and you're listening to the show, which, from the sounds of things, we're in a little bit of trouble. Steve is reporting in the audience, no echo, but a little whooshing background noise and static. No echo, quality very good on WebEx. Audio is fine on WebEx, so maybe we'll just take the audio from here and post it. But our keynote is up in the news. I'll go to that till Richard gets ready to introduce our guest. The keynote, as always, they've just now proven that there are gravitational waves coming from outer space. We've been saying that for 4 or 5 years, and we've associated frequencies with those gravitational waves. So every week we produce what we call the keynote, which is the frequencies coming to Earth and how they're affecting you at the moment. The adiponectin, which you probably can't buy over the counter, but it's something that helps you control appetite. It is in stress this week, so if you have more of an appetite, keep that in mind, and it's not you. But go down through reading some of the genes and toxins that are in stress, because a lot of times it is influenced from those universal frequencies. Like it controls the tides, it's now controlling you. One other thing that I would like to share as we go through all of this, if you go to the bottom of the keynote, you'll see that we have put up software and video of finding your perfect mate through our computer program that we did a couple of weeks ago. So we have a Vimeo up for that, and I will put that in the chat for everybody. Okay, Richard says he thinks he's here now. So go ahead and talk to me, Richard. I don't think we're hearing you, Richard. Does this mean that we also won't be able to hear our guest? Okay. So I'll go ahead and talk a few minutes about this Perfect Mate software that we're making available for everyone. You can go right on our site now and order it under software. Also, Amazon has asked us to put our software on their site. So that should be up within the next week. We have entitled it, on Amazon at least, Love is On, Looking for the Perfect Match Compatibility Software. And this it's about six clicks of a button. We originally put this out for Valentine's Day, but about three or four clicks of a button, and you can get a printout of what kind of a perfect partner you will be and what kind of a perfect partner you're looking for. Lots of information on our site. We did just put up a mail list thing, which I think I just killed a few minutes ago. But there were hundreds of people signing up for our website, probably because we have all of this free software. We have the bonus software this month that you can download along with the textbook, and it's the gray matter of Alzheimer's. If you have anybody in your family that has Alzheimer's, you can download that software. Also, radiation software, people on the West Coast, like Richard, you can see if you've been exposed to radioactive materials through Fukushima or any place else. Okay. Richard says he thinks he's back now. Richard, do you want to step in?
I hope so.
Richard, are you here?
No.
Great.
No, I'm here, but I'm hearing the echo.
Well,
I don't know where the echo is coming from. Does anybody in WebEx hear the echo?
No, no echo, but a little swooshing is all they're saying. So we can take the audio from this and put it up if you guys can stand hearing this echo.
Well, what I can do is I can I'll intro Lisa when we get ready to go, and then I will cut back out and try a different connection. But are we ready to bring Lisa in?
We are.
Okay, let me do the intro with Lisa, and then we will get this ball rolling while I'm over here with a bigger hammer. I'm not sure why we're having problems. Lisa Luton is a healthy living strategist and the founder of HealthyHappyAndHip.com. Using the skills she developed as a successful technology entrepreneur, Lisa self-hacked her own mind and body to restore her health and then go on to feel better than ever. A graduate of the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, she now helps highly successful superstars to slow down, chill out, develop a better relationship with food, feel great, and look good. Her articles have been featured in numerous publications, including the Huffington Post, Better After 50, and Mind Body Green. Lisa joins us to talk about her new book, Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
Richard, did you cut out again?
I backed up slightly. I'm going to try. Do you hear the echo, Lisa?
I do hear very much the echo.
Okay, so I'm going to mute myself, Sherry. You go ahead and start. I'll be back.
Okay. Well, in your book, which I think is very entertaining, very lively, very inviting, you talk about food as our drug of choice. Can you explain that?
Yes. I think that we are so busy and crazy in our lives, and many times we really need a break. And the most readily available way to take a break is to go get a snack. You know, if we were in the work world and we said, oh, I need to go take a nap, I need to go take a walk, I need to stop and meditate, someone might look at you and go, what? But if you say, I need a little snack, I'll be right back, they're like, oh, sure, I get that. And so we reach for food because, A, it's readily available. B, it makes us feel really, really great. And C, we've gotten in the habit of it.
I have a friend who does it with a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
She wants a break, and she feels like she ought to do something on her break. So is either one of those a good or bad choice?
Well, I'd rather someone turn to food than the cigarette, truthfully. But that being said, a lot of it depends on what food we're turning to. If someone's turning to a hot fudge sundae, it's probably not going to be the best choice daily. But if someone's turning to a carrot, no, it's not really addressing the underlying issue, but it's not going to cause much damage to your health.
Okay, one of the things that we found here at the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology is that when you chew, there's a couple of muscles that work together, and the frequencies of those two muscles create the biochemical of dopamine. So is it chewing, like in gum, or is it chewing as you need food? Because there's a big difference there, too.
There's a really big difference. And especially because we're living in a world right now where smoothies and juices are really popular. And in those cases, you're missing out on that chewing. And chewing is a natural stress reliever. Now, I'm not a big fan of gum. And the reason is it's training us to want something in our mouth all the time. And it's also putting undue stress on our jaw. And often it's filled with artificial sweeteners and other chemicals that we really just don't need. So let's take the gum off the table and go back to the food. I think chewing is critical. And we want to slowly chew our food, taste our food. It's a satisfying experience. It tells our body to get ready for digestion. And when we drink our meals all the time, we're missing out on that.
So you would suggest they get something like a carrot, like the really chewy stuff, and go for it?
Well, I think the first step is to understand what's really going on. And I think that when we can address the true underlying need, we can get to the heart of the matter. So if I'm really tired, I need a rest. If I'm really stressed, maybe I need some deep breathing. If I'm lonely, maybe I need to call a friend. And when we can get to the underlying issue, then we have a way of addressing the real problem. And that would be my first preference. That being said, in the interim, if you're a person that comes home from work and is grabbing the chips and going, crunch, 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 I'm so stressed, as a way of moving away from that, a temporary way to Band-Aid might be to grab some carrots, get that feeling, and really working towards addressing the deeper issue. So it's a Band-Aid.
Well, we're looking at your book, Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed, because we have your site open, healthyhappyandhip.com. And there's a picture of you there. You look to be mid-20s or so. And before the show, you told me you're 51 in that picture. That is awesome. So that says your system works. So how did you get here? You said you were a superwoman lifestyle, and that led to stress and overeating. I think everybody would relate to that story. Would you share?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So my story is a little bit unusual for when it took place, not so unusual for right now. When I was in my early 20s, I started a technology company. And I was working with my boyfriend, who's now my husband, and these were the days before Google and Facebook when it wasn't a cool thing to do in your 20s. And so we worked round the clock, you know, just working, trying to build this company. We didn't have millions of dollars thrown at us like many technology companies today. We were a bootstrap company. And I was eating really unhealthy food. I wasn't taking breaks. I wasn't taking care of myself at all. But I was in my 20s. And as you can in your 20s, you can get by with a lot of things that you can't get by with when you're older. And so I kept up at this relentless pace for many, many years. And I had a baby. I went back to work. I had another baby. I moved into a house. I was going through everything without ever stopping to listen to my body's clues that things were not going right. And then one day, out of the blue, I collapsed. I thought I was having a stroke. I was rushed to the hospital. I was scared. I had no idea. I felt like my body was alien. I didn't know what was going on. And the doctors said, "Oh, it's stress. Just stress." And they broke me because I knew stress. I had been dealing with stress my whole life. I was like, I can deal with stress. No big deal. This isn't stress. But all they kept doing was prescribing me prescriptions, and I kept refusing to take them because they couldn't tell me what was wrong with me. And after suffering terribly for about 2 years, I decided I had to do what any other entrepreneurial girl would do, is figure it out. Figure I had a problem, I had to solve it. And so I started researching. And I researched and researched and researched in books, because again, Google wasn't around then. And I started connecting the dots to my own health. And I started solving mysteries that I had had my entire life. And I started paying attention. And I said, oh, what happened for me was this crazy combination of exhaustion, crippling anxiety, which I didn't even know I had, and something in the family of ocular migraine, which again I didn't know I had either. And once I figured out what had gone wrong, I had to figure out how to make it right. And so I couldn't find any books, and I couldn't find any doctors to tell me how to make it right. So I started paying attention. I started paying attention to the food I ate, the exercise I did, my sleep, my stress, my caffeine, my thoughts, my attitudes, and I started making changes little by little by little until I restored my health. And then I said to myself, if I feel good, what would it take to feel great? And I just started experimenting more and more. Like, well, what would happen if I stopped eating this or if I started eating this? And what would happen if I tried this exercise and not that? And I just really became my own human guinea pig. And so fast forward 20 years later than that, I feel amazing. And I'm in my 50s. And I walk the walk, I talk the talk, and it really does make a huge difference.
I know,
and that's
for me,
how I got where I am today. I did end up going back to school for holistic nutrition. I did end up sharing all my knowledge with my clients and writing about it and running programs, and that led to my book. And it's a really exciting place to be.
I know for me, when I eat carbohydrates, I especially man-made ones, cake, pie, cookies, pasta, I feel terrible. Can people in your book find what's good or bad for them? Will this lead them to that answer?
Well, what you said just is everything. You listened to your body, and you felt terrible. And so that's the key of the book, is we want to put on our detective caps and start listening to our bodies. And our bodies will give us the answer. Oh, I ate that. I felt awful. Well, maybe I shouldn't eat that again.
Well, It took me a while to put it together because it wasn't immediate. It was 2 or 3 hours later when I would crash. So
what I would recommend for most people is keep a journal. And most people hear journal, they're thinking, oh, how many calories or what are your portion sizes? And I'm not really concerned about that right now. I would say, how is my energy? How is my hunger level? Am I feeling bloated? Am I feeling sad? And when we start connecting how foods make us feel, it opens up this world of amazement because we want to feel good. And if I know that eating that food is going to make me feel bad, I will start moving away from it. And if I know eating another food is going to make me feel fabulous, well, I'm going to be drawn to that food. And that's the goal. That's how we can start making permanent changes, when we start giving our bodies the food that's really going to make us thrive.
Did you find that nutrition had anything to do with this? Do you take supplements at all?
I take a few supplements, yeah. But I don't think that's the true answer to that. I think for me, I was a junk food addict most of my life until my collapse, let's call it, for lack of a better word. And it was around that time that I said, oh, maybe the food I'm eating is not serving me. And my first awareness was sugar. And I started trying to find everything I could to prove that sugar was something bad. But, you know, 20 years ago, fat was the villain, not sugar. And so there wasn't a lot out there on the dangers of sugar. I was convinced. I started noticing that when I ate sugar, I got sad. I got anxious. I started worrying more. I started worrying about different things more. I started having more self-doubt. And I did these experiments with myself over, on and off and on and off for many, many years, and it always proved true. But I still struggled giving it up because it was so good. And so it took me a long time to kind of get a handle on that. And now I know that sugar makes me feel awful. I still have it sometimes, and I look at it as a reminder, because it's within a day or two I start feeling terrible, and I go, oh, that's why I gave it up in the first place. And it's just a reminder. I don't beat myself up. I don't go crazy. I just go, oh, right, that felt awful. And that makes me want to not have sugar too often.
Is this sugar, is it a craving thing? Is that part of what's pushing people?
Well, what's happened is, you know, as years ago when they started calling fat the villain, they started taking the fat out of all the food and replacing it with sugar so the food would still taste good. And so over the years, sugar has come up in bread and tomato sauce and salad dressing and foods that we don't even expect to be sweet. We've gotten used to this sweetness. And not everybody, but I would say most of us, the more sugar we have, the more sugar we want. It's a chemical craving in the body, and studies have shown that it's more powerful than cocaine in terms of our craving. So what happens is, in a normal day, we're eating more sugar than ever before we even get to the cookies and the ice cream and the cakes. So in order to really stop craving that stuff, we've got to take it out of our system for a little while, and then amazing things start happening. We start finding sweetness in vegetables and sweetness in foods that we never even could taste because we were tasting things so much more sweetened. We lost our taste for the natural sweetness in food. And when we get that back, it's a beautiful thing because healthy food starts tasting divine.
We have gotten so many questions coming in. One of them was about, do you think your craving for sugar was an adrenal issue because the sugar gave you an immediate hype? Did you also take caffeine or pop? I mean, that's a whole bunch of questions together, but
those are great questions. So I grew up in an age where we had a lot of junk food around. You know, some people say that when you didn't have junk food, you were deprived and you wanted it. I had a ton of it, and I just really liked it. I think that working with my clients, most people are sugar sensitive. They don't realize it at first. And then when we look at their what they're eating in the day and they're putting their sweeteners in their coffee and they're drinking their soda or whatever it is, they go, wow, I am wanting sweet all the time. I just didn't realize it. So as far as the soda issue, that's a great question because I personally gave up caffeine for 27 years. I used to drink Tab way back in the day, and someone said to me, if you drink that, you're going to age. And I said, okay, I'm giving it up. And I gave it up for 27 years. Now I do drink a cup of coffee a day. I do think caffeine, a cup of coffee is fine. I do not believe it had anything to do with my adrenals because it was something I've dealt with in healthier times, unhealthy times. I just like the taste of sugar. But it doesn't like me.
We have a question from the audience here. Excuse the question, but I think it needs to be asked. How did you get your skinny bitch out of your way?
That's a really great question. So let me explain what I mean by the skinny bitch and how I ditched the skinny bitch. I also call her the inner critic bitch because that's our inner critic inside, and that's the voice we hear in our head that says, you're not thin enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not smart enough, you're not successful enough. And most of us have that voice in our head, and it doesn't make us feel good. And when I became aware that of my inner critic bitch, I gave her a name. I called her Frankie. And I started noticing my thought patterns. And I would say, this is not true. This is Frankie talking. I am perfectly smart enough. I am perfectly this enough, that enough. And I don't need you to tell me this, Frankie. So step one was naming her, this person, in my head, recognizing that just because I thought it did not mean it was true, and substituting the negative thought with a better, more positive, more compassionate, loving thought. So when I would hear Frankie saying to me, you're not smart enough, I would say, yes, I am. I might not be the smartest person in the world. I might not be the dumbest person in the world. I'm very creatively intelligent. I learn whatever I need to learn. I have demonstrated ability that I'm smart enough, and I'm okay with that. And over time, the positive thoughts start replacing the negativity. Does that make sense?
It does, and it leads right into something we talked about before the show, when you talked about eating junk food because it was easy and convenient, I think. And I said, well, I just hate to cook, so if somebody else was cooking, it'd be okay. And you talked about going into this transition of from junk food, easy, convenient, to loving to cook. How did you get there?
Well, it's really interesting because when I was working crazy, I didn't have time or interest. And I think it was almost a rebellion thing. I was like, I'm not going to be like my mom. I was this career woman, and it wasn't important to me, and I shunned it. And so when I came to it in my own special way, I was really insecure about my cooking by the time I wanted to cook. So I took Sunday afternoons, and I started cooking for me. And I wouldn't let anybody else try it because I was too embarrassed. And I thought, I'm just going to keep trying cooking every Sunday. And after a while, it started tasting really good. And I realized that I wasn't ever going to be that person cooking these fancy dishes with these fancy sauces, and I didn't even like eating that way. I liked eating fresh, a lot of vegetables and fruits and whole grains and good, proteins. And when I started cooking the foods that I enjoyed for nobody else but me, I started liking it because it's fun. And I looked at, like, arts and crafts class. Like, I want bright colors and different shapes and different textures. And I just had fun. And then it wasn't a chore anymore. It was just a fun thing to do. And I started really loving it.
Are all of these pictures on the Instagram, are these things that you've cooked? Because they're beautiful.
No, they're not. Some of the things are, but some of the things are restaurants that I just take pictures of or people send me pictures. But the point of the Instagram feed is to show that healthy food is beautiful. It's so delicious and tempting. And in a world where we are just smothered with ooey, gooey, snickerdoodle stuffed brownies and treats galore, I thought it was really important to show how mouthwatering, really delicious, healthy food could look.
Well, it's incredibly beautiful and appetizing. It makes my mouth water. So I put the link in for people.
Great.
Richard cannot join us, but he has a question.
Yes.
Please talk about what cupcakes, cocaine, and aspartame have in common.
Well, they're all making us crave more. I wrote an article which became a chapter called One Girl's Cupcake is Another Girl's Crack Cocaine. And in it, I explained that for me, sometimes I'm going to say no to dessert. And people get really weirded out with that. They go, what's the matter? You know, you're depriving yourself. And I'm not depriving myself. I'm being good to myself for the reasons I mentioned before. It's not about calories. It's not about vanity. It's about mental health for me. Because when I eat sugar, I can't stop. And I, just like cocaine would act, when you would, I'm assuming, I don't know, if you did cocaine, you would want more cocaine. And the interesting thing is the artificial sweetener thing. And this is what I'm going to talk about, is that we think we're doing this great thing when we have a diet food. Oh, I'm getting the sweet taste without the calories. But what happens is, our brain thinks that sugar is coming, and it goes, yes! But then it doesn't come. And you know what happens? We start craving sugar even more because our brain is saying, where's that sugar? You promised me sugar. It's not here. And to make matters worse, certain artificial sweeteners are hundreds and hundreds of times sweeter than natural sugars. So we are retraining our taste buds to need sweeter, where normal food doesn't taste good to us anymore.
One of the things we talked about on the show before that we figured out here at the Institute is each cell asks for something by a frequency, and aspartame and glutamate are the same frequency. So when your cell needs glutamate to function and keep your muscles supple and to detoxify, and since aspartame has the same frequency and it binds with it, then your body gets incredibly toxic and mixed up and in chaos. So just a little aside there for people that they're really doing a lot of damage. I'm looking at your book, and I want to share some of the names of some of these chapters, which I think are just a hoot. Number 8, take a sofa safari. Play the reframe game. Is spirituality the new spandex? Transcendental tricks. Transcendental tricks to get a quick fix. Move and groove with nothing to prove. These are awesome titles. This is such a fun book. What do you want people to be able to take from this book to change their lives?
Well, I tried to write the book in such a way to give readers a very simple system of connecting their own dots. And I take them through everything from understanding that just because they think something does not necessarily mean that it's true. So just because you think you're hungry doesn't mean you're actually hungry. We think about how foods affect us. Are you still there? Hello?
Hello? Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Look, it sounded like I tuned out for a minute. We look at foods, we take away foods, and add healthier foods. And by the end of the book, hopefully you can be a little bit nicer to yourself, understand yourself as a better, as an eater, and start developing a better relationship with yourself and with food to take the stress out of it. We have so much natural stress in our life, we don't need food to add to our stress.
Well, on page 89, there is a nice little true and false to really get you closer to who you are and what you really want. So a lot of this is just getting to the core of yourself. I think it's an incredible book. You've given three tips that I read about that really help people. You want to explain those?
I'm not sure which tips you're referring to, because there are many tips through the book.
Oh, this was in your literature. One was how to tell if you're really hungry or just dissatisfied. Then identifying your triggers. And
okay, those tips. Okay. Got it. I didn't know if you were referring which tips you were. So I really think that you have to understand why you're eating. And when you can stop and take a pause, that's a minute before you eat something, and say, what am I really hungry for? What's really going on here? Why am I eating? Am I eating because I'm sad, because I'm lonely, because I'm anxious? You know, is this food going to really satisfy me? Is this something that if I take a bite, I'm going to keep going till the whole bag is gone? And how am I going to feel physically and mentally after eating this food? Am I going to beat myself up after I eat that? And when we pause and we ask these questions, we put that detective cap on, we can start understanding ourselves better without judgment and shame. It's all data. It's all, we just look at ourselves and say, isn't that interesting that I just ate a whole bag of cookies? Why did I do that? Instead of, I'm such a loser. That's not going to help you change behavior. But if I say, oh, I did that because I came home, I was lonely, sad, and depressed, and the cookies were calling my name, I could sit down and say, what can I do instead? What's really going to make me feel satisfied in my life? And when it comes down to it, we are all hungry for life.
And energy.
And energy. And calm.
Yes. So we have somebody in the audience. I don't think this is a question, maybe a statement. The other part of this is we have GMO foods and are not the good food we used to have. ENIVA, Enivia from Minnesota, it looks like, had a tape on how the soil in the U.S. has been depleted like since the 1940s or earlier. So that's part of the equation, too. We have great supplements now that can help. If we cannot afford the boxed greens, we eat what we can.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. And the point is that be a food snob and eat the best quality food you can get your hands on. And if you can get the freshest, most organic, non-GMO food, go for it. But if you can't, do the best you can. You know, buy frozen vegetables, you know, or buy what you have access to. And different times you're going to have access to different foods. So do the best you can. And remember, eating frozen broccoli is still going to be way healthier than eating fast food. So try to get the best food possible. But don't beat yourself up if you can't every single time. Because, again, that's going to stress you out as well. And my goal is to take the stress away. You have enough stress in your life. But always get the best quality that you can at any given meal.
So you're saying if we eat well and have better energy and better outlook, then we'll deal with stress differently?
Absolutely. There's a huge connection between food and mood. And so when we're eating healthy foods, we're supporting our better digestion, we're supporting our gut health, we're supporting our immunity, and we're going to function better in the world. We're going to be more clear-headed, we're going to be more calm, we're going to feel better. And that's what we want.
A question from the audience, too. Are there chemicals that relate eating satisfaction with stress? Maybe they're talking about cortisol or something like that.
Well, you know, cortisol is released in our body when we're in stress mode. And it served us really well when we were cavemen and women because it told us that danger was present and it stopped all of our non-essential functions like digestion, immunity, and it gave us that rush we needed to escape the danger. But the problem is we're living in a world where we have 24/7 danger. Our body doesn't know the difference between traffic, where we're annoyed, than being chased by a tiger. And so our bodies think we are constantly in this stress mode. We are having way too much cortisol in our body, which is, you know, causing a lot of that belly fat that we're dealing with. And it's just not a healthy way to be. I was that person that crashed and burned. I did not listen to my body. I did not take care of my body. And I paid the price in a huge way. I don't want that to happen to you guys.
When they released you from the hospital and said, oh, that's just stress, did they give you any clues about how to deal with it?
No, they gave me nothing. And I fell into a deep, dark hole of depression. I was embarrassed. I thought, it was silly. They were minimizing it, and it was awful. And I went to so many follow-up appointments, and they were like, well, you know, maybe you have a migraines, maybe this. But I was suffering, and I did not believe that that was the answer. I didn't believe taking a pill was going to help me understand what was wrong with me. And it wouldn't have. And I think that's part of the problem right now is people are rushing to take a pill to fix it rather than to say, what is going on with me? What's causing me to feel anxious and stressed and maybe food obsessed? You know, what is causing this? And we need to get to the underlying root of what's going on in our body. And the way to do that is to be quiet and listen.
Here's another audience question. We've talked a lot about food. Are there drinks that are no-nos?
Well, I'm a big believer that water is our best drink, and herbal tea after that is a pretty good option. And after that, I'm not a fan of sports drinks, not a fan of soda for sure, alcohol in moderation. And juice is not really that great. If you're having a fresh green juice, perhaps, but most fruit juices, it's taken out the fiber, it's taken out the pulp, and it's left with just too much sugar. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, well, they ask about alcohol, too, in particular.
Alcohol is a big issue right now. I'm seeing alcohol is a huge issue for many of my clients. And when they're using it, for stress relief at the end of the day, but they're also using it unknowingly to satisfy hunger. Because, and I deal mostly with women, so I'm going to talk about women. But many women at 4 or 5 o'clock are reaching for wine because they're tired, they're stressed, they might be worried about, especially if they have children, oh my God, how am I going to get through this evening with homework and with bedtime, and I need a little helper. And so many of these women, when I've actually experimented a little bit and said, let's have some food at that time, you may be hungry, they're really surprised that, yes, I was hungry, and I was reaching for the wine. Or if it was just the stress and not the hunger, if we can work in some meditation or relaxation techniques, sometimes that will address the need as well. Because it's very easy to have 2-3 glasses of wine a night. I'm seeing this more and more and more, sometimes even a whole bottle a night. And this is very dangerous, as we know.
Well, when you mentioned a while ago, or a minute ago, your clients, do you have a practice? Can people get in touch with you?
I do have a practice, and the best way to get in touch with me is through my website, which is healthyhappyandhip.com. I also have a newsletter which people can sign up for, and I offer occasional online courses, programs, lots of healthy tips and inspiration.
Oh, I see. Coaching services. Let's look at group programs and retreats, healthy recipes. When someone comes to see you, is one of the first steps you do just helping them eliminate all of the things that are causing a problem?
That's not the first thing. We do that later. But the first thing we actually do is say, we don't talk about food at all. They go, let's look at your life. Are you happy? Are you having fun in your life? How are your relationships? Are you learning new things? Are you financially stressed? And we go through 10 or 12 different areas, your spiritual practice, your tranquility. And oftentimes, we uncover keys. These are clues to what's really going on with the food. Because food has this way of becoming what we need it to be. It fills the voids in our life. If we are miserable with our job, food can cheer us up. If we're lonely, food can keep us company. If we're happy, food can celebrate with us. And so food has a way of just being whatever we want it to be. So the first thing we really do is say, what's going on in my life? And people are always like, wow, I didn't even think about that. I never made that connection.
Do people need to come and see you? Can you work over the phone?
Yes, I work over the phone, and my programs, I do a lot of local programs, but they're migrating to be online programs where people can do them from anywhere.
Here is a strange question, and I think they said, they quoted it from one of your books, do women think about food the way that men think about sex?
I love that. People, somewhere along the way, our wires got crossed. And let's backtrack for a minute. Women, usually in the family, are the ones that have to think about the food thing. Obviously, there are some men that do, but for most women, they're the ones buying the food, cooking the food, serving the food, wrapping up the food, making the lunches. So food is on our minds to begin with. Then, when we go back to that concept of fight or flight mode, when we're in that stress mode, what do we do when we don't want to be somewhere? We check out. And if we can't get out of the room physically, we check out mentally. For example, you're on a phone call and you start doodling, or you start looking at email while you're talking. You're just checked out. So for those of us who are food obsessed, our mind goes to food instantly. Oh, I have to go to the market. Oh, what should I make for dinner? Oh, I ate too much for breakfast. So our minds are going to food again and again and again. And what's happened is women are thinking about food all day long, the way that we always hear that men are thinking about sex all day long, because food has become our source of pleasure.
Oh, wow. It's Richard that's usually tongue-tied when somebody says something great. We're looking at your site, at your book, and it says 5 reasons why you need to read this book, The Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed. I love that title. 1, get over the diet mentality and stop beating yourself up over not always eating perfectly. And that's going to lead me to another question. 2, I'm just reading this for people who need to go out and get this book. 2, ditch the shame, guilt, and hardcore no pain, no gain tactic that does not work. 3, identify your own chemical and emotional triggers in order to conquer cravings for good. Boy, this is a lot in one book. 4, incorporate the best mindfulness practices to slow down and reconnect with your body. 5, discover what truly nourishes you so that you can finally stop thinking about food all the time. So this is what Lisa is offering to you in her new book, but she's also written another book, Success is Not About Perfection. It's about how many times, this is from the audience, it's about how many times I get back on track after falling off. That seems to be a larger than life book. Success is not about perfection.
This is the first book I've written.
Oh,
that's just a quote from the book.
Okay. So you're saying then that if we get our food stuff in order, that'll give us the energy and the mental set to go out and do all that we can do without stressing ourselves.
And to live our best life. You know what? We're taking up a lot of valuable real estate in our brains with all this food stress. Oh, I should eat that. I shouldn't eat that. I have to eat this much protein. I can't this. And when we can put the food in its proper place and stop worrying about it all the time, we have more energy and room in our life to go live and be happy and live vibrant, wonderful, healthy lives. And that's what it's all about.
Is there one thing of all the things, 5 things you present, what's the worst stumbling block for people?
I think the worst stumbling block is what I call living in black and white land, where they're either on the plan or they're off the plan. It's like, oh, I'm eating healthy, I'm eating perfect, I'm doing everything, and then something happens and they go, I'm going to eat nothing, I'm not going to work out. It's all or nothing. And I like to say, let's live in gray instead of black or white, where we're doing the best we can every day. And maybe you're not going to be perfect every day, but you're going to be more consistent that way. And you're not going to be putting so much pressure on yourself to be perfect, because that's why it's not sustainable. Perfection is not sustainable. Real life, we mess up, big deal. Just keep going. Get back on track again and again and again. And that's sustainable. So I would say that's a very helpful tip to people out there. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to be pretty good most of the time. And you'll be okay.
So if you foul up and eat a cupcake, go right back on it. Don't say, oh, well, I have time now. I can eat 4 cupcakes.
Exactly. Don't go down that spiral of despair. I messed up. I'm not perfect. Why not just eat everything in sight? You ate a cupcake. You're human. Get over it. Okay, how do I feel? Well, I'm beating myself up because I feel like I failed. So next time you're going to eat the cupcake, say, how did I feel last time? Oh, I beat myself up. I didn't feel good. That might be enough for you to say, I'm not going to eat the cupcake next time. It's all data. Use the data to your best without beating yourself up. And you will notice that you'll make changes in your life.
Well, I think I've noticed, too, that when I was younger, I could get away with a lot more. And as the age comes upon us all, we need to be more and more cognizant of what's good for us and what's not. And I think your book is absolutely wonderful for looking at that. And I hope we haven't left anything out that's really important that you want to share with the audience. And if we have, would you talk about that now?
I think that mindfulness piece is so important. We do live in a world where we're running around crazy 24/7. And even if you can only find a minute in your day, just to sit down and close your eyes and breathe deeply is so beneficial for you. You can do a quick body scan and see what's going on in your body. You can lower your stress rate, calm down your nerves. If you have a meditation practice, awesome. I think that's great. Go for it. If you don't, you can work up to it, even with just this starting to be quiet. And it's a very small thing that can go a long way. So I would say that's one of the most important things you can do for yourself. Is just do nothing.
There are some wonderful sayings in your book. Our bodies tell us when we are tired so that we can get rest, not so we can keep drinking more and more coffee. I mean, just so, such common sense, but such smack you in the head. By now here's another one. By focusing on all the good we have in our lives rather than the misfortunes, we are attracting more good stuff to come our way. Lisa, thank you so much for being a part of this and putting up with a bit of our production malfunction here. Richard, I'm sorry you did not get to answer any questions and had to stay mute. Please, everyone, if you're interested in getting out of that cycle of food running your life, busy, stressed, and food obsessed, calm down, ditch your inner critic bitch, and figure out what your body needs to thrive. Lisa Lutan, thank you very much for writing this book. Thank you for being on the show. We are out of time, but we will certainly have you back anytime that you want to be here if you have a message. And people can get in touch with Lisa. I put this in the chat, Lisa, but they'd rather hear it from you. How can they get in touch with you?
My website is healthyhappyandhip.com. Please visit, sign up for my newsletter. You can drop me a note on the website, and I'd love to hear from you. The book can be found on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. It's called Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed. And I really love speaking to people and hearing their stories. So please reach out, get in touch, and I promise you I will answer your questions.
If they want to be a client, is there a special place they should write?
They would write it on the website. There's a place to contact me. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Sherry and Richard, thanks so much for having me today. It's been such a pleasure.
Well, I think you are a very authentic person who really wants to help other people, and that's the kind of guest that we love the most. Thank you for being here, audience. Thank you for being here, Lisa. Richard, I don't know if you can come on with any closing thoughts because of the glitches, but if not, would you just play our outro music, and we will see everyone on Tuesday. And I think we are going to be doing cholesterol testing online, which has a great deal to do with eating and the brain and how you feel. And thank you for being here.
Thank you.